Money.
What a great track. Jerry, don't you say that's a jam, isn't it?
That is a jam, Lover Money, Ed. Why do you talk about it now? Why do you bring it up now?
Well, you know, I know Prince was given it as an option. What is it, love or is it money? But we're going to ask you guys out there, all our wonderful listeners, that actually love equals money, because we're actually throwing out a bit of money over the last couple of years, Jared and myself, to put this podcast together, to have it actually on a platform that you guys can access and distribute it across to Spotify and Apple and all around the world. And we need your love. We need a little bit of your money to kind of offset the costs that we've been incurring over the last couple of years. We hate to have to do this, because we do this out of the love of Prince. I know you guys listen because of the love of Prince, but any little bit of help you could give us financially would certainly be very, very much appreciated.
That's right, Ed. You couldn't be more right. And, you know, folks, when you sign up to be a subscriber to When Does Podcast through our Buzzsprout platform, you will eventually get some access to some bonus materials. Ed and I have some big plans for projects we want to get people involved in when they subscribe to our show. And all of that will be announced soon. So help us out. Show a little love. Show a little money by helping us keep this project going. We're so grateful for your help, and we're so grateful to everyone who's already subscribed. Keep it coming, folks.
Please do it, guys. Listen. And listen, like Jared said, you know, throw some money. We're not going to forget these early investors, these early folks who jump up first and say, raise their hand, dip into their wallet, say, I can give you a couple bucks a month. As Jared said, we're going to look for opportunities to present some exclusive material to those subscribers. And maybe get you guys directly involved. Like if you have ideas for shows, you want to be on one of the podcasts. Listen, we have no pride. We'll do whatever it takes.
I think it's well established. We have no pride.
Exactly. So folks, again, I mean, we wish we didn't have to ask for a little bit of help, but we certainly would appreciate maybe if you could grab some change and throw some money our way, it would certainly help us offset some costs that we incur.
And what's more, everybody, you can donate whatever level you feel like. As little as $3, as much as, you know, if you want to subscribe for $1 million an episode. I mean, sure. You don't have to do that. But if you wanted to do that, you could.
Do it.
Love or money.
That's right. Love or money, people.
Love or money. Cool. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Now back to our regular programming.
Ed, hello.
Hey, Jared, how you been?
Sometimes an influx of energy is what's needed, and today it is needed. It is a gray, rainy day here in Philadelphia.
Oh, to tell you about how the world is crazy.
Tell me.
It is absolutely blue sky. I'm not even lying. I'm not just saying this to be a
contradictory.
Contradictory.
Yeah.
To be a contrarian. It is blue sky, sunny, and like 65 degrees where in Harrisburg today. It's beautiful right now.
Well, we have the warmth here in Philly today, but it's been raining all day, and it's kind of miserable, and the sky is gray. And so to have your positive energy shooting my way.
Yes.
I like it. I like it. I need it. And we're talking today about, well, let me back up and say this, Ed, I don't want to upset anyone, but
what's special about today's episode?
Well, what's special about today's episode? And you correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I do. Yeah. It's a piece of work, but go ahead. Continue.
Right. Yeah. Do your best. So, I believe that this is the final album review of this season of When Doves Podcast. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And you know what? We were talking about this because you and I were like oh, we got to get ahead of some episodes. And I'm like, Jared, this is the last studio album for this decade.
Right.
It felt like it came up fast, but I kind of went back and looked at our list of episodes. I think we began season 3 in October.
Yo, that's true. And we also, we had the holidays in between, and we had some, so we had some interview episodes in between, right. some different things. So if we hadn't had that, it would have been even shorter.
Yeah, but then end of October.
Yeah, but here we are. We're at the end of the 2000 to 2010 decade. We're going to start up afresh with, I guess it'll be 2010, obviously.
2010, appropriately, yeah. That
will be the next album. We start the next season. So I wanted to ask you, we're going to be discussing this album, which is Minneapolis Sound, MPLS Sound.
Yep.
Do you have any general reflections you want to throw out there on this season, what you've noticed in Prince's journey, anything like that before we dive into this record?
I'm going to save some incredible insights for our wrap-up pod.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm going to hold back a little bit.
Right.
Just
some quick little bites.
Real quick things. I would say this is Prince's coming out of the 90s.
Right.
About what an interesting kind of whack, crazy journey that was for him. Excuse me. This was Prince's kind of like his earned, well-earned, I felt, victory lap for his career. Really coming into really, we'll really get into 2004 with Musicology, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the performance of that. And Prince becomes the living legend during this period. Like he transforms into that. And it's, I mean, it's appropriate because he's such a musical genius and he deserves it. And it's also, I think, amazing that, you know, does he hit the heights he did in his prime? No, because most artists, it's hard to do that. But he hits the mark a number of times throughout this decade. And releases some very interesting projects. So, you know, is it an uneven decade? Sure, of course. Yeah, we'll talk about it in more detail and maybe do a wrap. But like, I think Prince does a nice job of establishing himself as sort of an elder statesman of music within this 10-year period.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the way you put it, you know, that it is a bit of a victory lap. Right. In a sense, you know, this is now technically the third decade or like third and a half decade of his career.
Half decade roughly, yeah.
Right. So now he's the elder statesman and he's able to sort of the how do I want to put it? Like, and again, you're right. We don't want to throw too much out there before we do our wrap up episode, which will be coming down the pike. But to have the 90s have been a little bit of a lost in the wilderness kind of journey for him, at least commercially speaking, for sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. To have him come back, have several records debut at number one, you know, move a decent amount of copies, all of the, you know, sort of the legacy recognition. I think that's all really important stuff. And I think that it's interesting with that said, that kept in mind, that here we have a record where just like the first record, just like the first couple records, it's just him.
Yeah. Yeah. He goes back to Prince. Prince is a one-man band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, you know, you think about from the Revolution, he had that, you know, that of course, you know, very successful stint in the Sign of the Times era as a one-man band, but then went back, got the New Power Generation, went through a lot of band configurations in the 90s. Rainbow Children had its own configuration. So it's interesting, yeah, that this particular album, he's decided to kind of go back into this one-man band kind of approach.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm eager to talk about this one, Minneapolis Sound. And now, but before we do, Ed, there's a couple of things I want to mention.
Please do.
You know, we have our very dedicated listener that all of our followers know. That's our good friend, Matthew Alexander.
Matthew.
Matty A, as he is known colloquially. Are you impressed how I pronounce colloquially? See, I couldn't do it a second time. I got it out.
I love that you did it because I'm going to avoid any complex word today as you saw me go through.
Too difficult. Too difficult. Yeah. But Matty has been on top of being our de facto research guy.
Love it.
And you had suggested, I think rightfully so, that in light of Matty A's dedicated work,
yes,
that we might have to have a research catch-up corner, a new feature of the show.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll work out some kind of theme music for the research ketchup corner.
Hey, Jared, what information sitting over there in the research ketchup corner?
I like how you sounded like an extra from a Jimmy Cagney movie from 1936. That's fantastic.
That's right. It always plays, Jared. Always
plays. Always plays. It's never out of style. So Maddie came, you know, we threw a lot of research questions at him. And he was on top of it. Our guy was on top of it. So I want to give him his due credit now, early on, as per your suggestion. So let's just go over some of the research that he did. Now, Ed, you might remember last week we discussed lotus flower.
Yes.
And we also discussed lotus the car.
You brought that up. Yeah.
I brought that up. And we said, do they even still make lotus the car? Well, Mattie A., the researcher, which I guess is now his new title, we'll have to come up with a catchier one than that. he came back with us with some information. They still make them. They run about 100,000 a piece.
Wow.
Although, Ed, with your extravagance and the way you like to live your life, they do make a supercar that's 2.1 million. So that's
that probably more my style. Yeah.
That's more your style. That's more your style. It's a British company. Matt found all this information. Lotus is a British car company founded in 1952. They won a number of F1 races and were responsible for the engine in the Toyota Supra.
Hmm.
There you go. There's that. We also might know a very particular Lotus car, a model called the Lotus Esprit, which was seen in the James Bond movie, The Spy Who Loved Me. That's the one that turns into a submarine, if you recall that.
Okay, yep.
And Maddie found out that Elon Musk purchased that car, that very same prop car.
Nice.
And was disappointed to learn that it didn't actually turn into a submarine.
That is disappointing.
Do we know? Are we sure that Elon is really a smart guy? Because he thought a prop movie car was going to turn into a submarine?
You know, maybe we don't invest. Maybe I pull a little of my investment out of his companies.
I feel like Elon should spend some of his money developing that submarine car instead of buying Twitter and other things that he does.
Get out of Twitter. Get into the water. I'm with you 100%.
Get into the water.
Submerge.
Yeah. Absolutely. We also asked Maddie to find us other songs that had the word boom in the title.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And he got several for us. He says the best one, by his estimation, is Boom Like That by Mark Knopfler.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't even know that track.
Nope.
So, but sure, Mark Knopfler. Yeah, okay. He listed some other Boom songs of note. We have Boom by the X-Ambassadors. Boom Boom by John Lee Hooker. We should have said that one.
Oh, Boom Boom Boom. That's a great track. That's one of my favorite little mini moments.
We should have known that one. Boom by System of a Down. Boom by The Roots. We should have known that too because The Roots are our hometown guys. Boom Boom Mancini by the late great Warren Zevon.
Huh.
And Boom Boom Go Out the Lights by the Pat Travers Band. And he also mentions Boom by Flight of the Conchords.
Okay.
There you go.
Maddie.
So Matt's really on top of it with his research. Maddie, keep your ears sharp. I'm sure we'll throw some research questions at you this time around. So be ready for that.
Thank you much, Maddie. Yeah, we'll as things come up organically in the conversation, we'll shoot some other requests your way. So we appreciate the hard work.
We do appreciate the hard work. I also have this, it's a tiny smidgen, just a tiny little smidgen of Prince in the news.
Prince.
On the march!
So, Ed, you know I'm a big U2 fan.
When did that start?
So earlier today, actually. I never heard them.
Oh, who is this band you speak of?
So you may know that Bono, the lead singer and lyricist for U2, he just released his memoir a couple of months ago. Okay. And I just finished reading it. It's a great read.
Nice.
He's a wonderful writer and is funny and self-deprecating and tells some great stories. But the reason I bring it up now is that this isn't like super Prince in the news, but I thought it was interesting. He has a whole little mini chapter about Prince.
Oh, that's cool.
which is cool. And it's the chapter is titled A Royal Visit.
Oh, nice.
And so I'll just read a, I won't read this whole thing, but I'll just read a little excerpt from it because I think you'll appreciate it. He says this, quote, "In show business, you need a great entrance and a great exit. The entrance of the artist, who would become known as the artist formerly known as Prince, was flamboyant. His exits, even more so. Going out for a drink with Prince, the night might end with him leaving by hopping from table to table to table. It's quite the sight to be sitting with someone and then watch as they stand up, clamber onto your table, climb to the next table, and then on to the next, arriving at the exit before people have clocked what's happened, except that he's left. What they haven't clocked, and neither did I at first, is that his people are standing by those tables, holding them steady as he dances over them. I'm at heart always a fan. That's how I got into music. Among the benefits of this ultra life I have been given is that sometimes fortune grants me the chance to spend time with someone I will always be a fan of, like Prince. I had this honor and this pleasure on several occasions. It was like being in the company of an untouchable, a Duke Ellington or a Hendrix. He was an actual genius."
Wow, nice. That's pretty beautiful.
Nice.
And they can get the book title again for folks if they want to pick it up?
Oh, yes. The title of this book is Surrender. 40 Songs, One Story is the title of the book. If you are a music fan at all, if you're a YouTube fan especially, but it's a good, Ed, as you know, I read a lot of these. I read a lot of
absolutely. Yep.
Rock and roll memoirs and stuff like this. I would say this is in the higher tier of them because Bono is quite a good writer.
Nice.
And I was excited to see him have this little chapter about Prince. He also has one about Bowie and Johnny Cash and, you know, other musicians he's been close to and fans of over the years. So I wanted to share that with everybody. I thought it was cool to see that.
Nice. Thanks for sharing. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. Anyway, that all being said, should we move on to Minneapolis Sound, or do you pronounce it MPLS Sound? How do you pronounce it?
I just say Minneapolis Sound.
Sound.
Yeah. Are you saying you're going to bring on those? I can't do a Lynn drum machine sound. How do you do that? Yeah, but bring those Minneapolis Sound facts and figures now.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, Ed. So I'm going to dive into the reviews because we already went over like really most of the facts and figures because it was all part of the same collection last week. So let me start with the reviews. I'm going to start with our friends at Pitchfork. Now, you might remember Pitchfork gave Lotus Flower en masse a 4.9.
Correct.
And I read the Lotus Flower section. Now I'm going to give us what they said about Minneapolis Sound.
Let's hear it.
All right, here we go. "If Lotus Flower is generic and too reverential modern day muso prince, then Minneapolis Sound is either crass or delusional. It's crass if it's a conceptual cash grab, Prince bald-facedly pastiching his own 80s sound as a profitable parlor game. Times being vice tight, presumably even for those with the renewable resource of a deep catalog of Hall of Fame hits, dusting off the drum machine makes a certain sad sense. And a by-numbers ballad like Here sounds undeniably better backed by its twee little keyboard hook than like a flute. It's delusional if he's serious, because it means he thinks these flimsy self-homages wouldn't sound anemic next to tunes from Purple Rain or Parade, which you can at least write off as the kind of perception-free baloney we expect from geniuses of his stripe. Either way, Minneapolis Sound is surprise, momentarily enjoyable, and completely inessential. Happy to provoke Pavlovian responses, since the hard work of honestly juicing your head, heart, or hips is antithetical to the whole idea. Sure, you can still sieve off a few decent tracks for your Prince in the Aughts playlist. The Camille Redux of Dance for Me is my personal choice, if only because he tries to shoehorn in all of the sex, religion, androgyny cliches. But while I'd pick electro-funk Prince over jazz-funk Prince every day of the week, the proximity of Lotus Flower makes the pleasure of Minneapolis Sound feel even more hollow.
Hmm.
Like it's merely a spoonful of synth-driven sugar designed to sell naysayers on the non-electronic new stuff Prince wants you to cherish as much as the old faves. I'm just gonna say right now, like, I love Pitchfork makes me so angry. Like, it's so ridiculous. That's too harsh. I think that's too harsh of a statement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough to be someone like Prince and have such, and this comes up for me in the listening to this album, we'll talk about it, but like, to have the legacy he's already established for himself and the catalog he's already established for himself, it's easy to take shots above you, right? Take the pop shots above.
I'm with you.
I think that's a little, you're going to find that this is not an album that I would be like, oh my God, this album, but like, it's a little harsh. I'm with you. It's a little harsh.
I think it's a little harsh. And I think it's, it feels almost like rude to me.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that this was a calculated cash grab. I don't quite see that. Like, he didn't promote this. He didn't tour it.
No. And he also, part of a set. He didn't release it separately.
And it's part of a set that it was a double album that was selling for $11.98.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so like, it wasn't like he was charging $70. Well, he did in certain formats, but like, if you go to Target, it was a $12 double CD, or, you know, so
yeah,
it was a bargain. Bargain, I swear.
Bargain, bargain. Let's move on to the next review. We have this from our friends at Goldie's Parade.
Goldie's.
They gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
Oh.
From Minneapolis Sound. And they said this, quote, released as a companion album to Lotus Flower, Minneapolis Sound actually is the better, more accomplished half of the two. Faced with expectations of a collaborative, eclectic, madhouse-style album, Minneapolis Sound does not only surprise, but returns tenfold, too. This is vintage Prince. There'll never be another like me in Chocolate Box to start an album that is strangely mainstream for what is, after all, intended for the fans. Supposed to recapture the sound of Dirty Mind, Minneapolis Sound nonetheless strikes hot from the outset. It settles into its own with Dance For Me, Here, No More Candy For You, and the magnificent Old School Company that will have you clamoring for repeat. 2001's You're Gonna See Me gets even a glossier upworking, proving that perfectionist Prince really can't put a foot wrong, having recovered a penchant for commercial music again. If it is possible to pick a best from this album, that is Valentina, named after the newly born daughter of friend Salma Hayek. Tell your mama she should give me a call. This is Prince at his best since leaving Warner Brothers, which before Minneapolis Sound, one would have dared admit. The only crime is that this was released as an exclusivity deal with, if you live outside the U.S., you'll be forgiven for not knowing, Target. Plain barmy for an album this solid, but that's just it. Being a Prince fan is a journey, and after all, there never really will be another one like Prince.
Now, on the other hand, I don't agree with this review. I think this review is a little too flattering of the album. So it's like, it's somewhere in between the two reviews in my mind.
I agree. I think that's a little too much on the other side, although I'm excited to talk about it. Well, I shouldn't say anything. I won't say anything, but I agree with you. It's a little too effusive.
Are you saying you're fighting the urge to get ahead of it?
Get ahead of it? Exactly. Here's Rolling Stone. They gave Minneapolis Sound 3 stars out of 5. They said, Minneapolis Sound isn't much better than Lotus Flower. There's funk jams that evoke classic Prince, but those are surrounded by bland songs that sound half finished.
Okay.
Get Into This, who does that? They, as I've mentioned several times, they rank every project of his. They ranked it 46th out of 65 overall.
Okay.
They said, "Quote: quite a self-conscious attempt to reclaim his '80s electronic sound. Works better in some places than others. Much more successful at it than its similar follow-up 2010." Never officially released in the UK, but available on Tidal, blah, blah, blah. So that's that. Here's our friends at Wilson and Alloy.
Hey, guys.
They gave it 2.5 stars out of 5.
Okay.
And they said this. Prince revisits some of his 80s tropes, synth, programmed drums, and his raciest lyrics in ages, largely up-tempo. The lyrics hark back to the good old days. Apart from a Q-Tip guest appearance on Chocolate Box, everything's produced, arranged, composed, and performed by Prince. It feels good to write that again. However, from a songwriting perspective, the disc is the weakest of his spring collection, overrun with underwritten vamps like Valentina and silly self-aggrandizing like There'll Never Be Another Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
That's that. Now, here we have, I tried to find a couple of others, something different. You know, I tried to do that last time.
Yep.
So I did find two more. There weren't a ton of reviews just on Minneapolis Sound. So this is a website I've referenced in the past. They're called Sputnik Music.
Oh, that Russian site.
Yeah, this is Vladimir Putin's personal ranking of Prince. People don't know he's a huge Prince fan. They don't know that.
We're sure these are just agitators trying to confuse us with misinformation.
Yeah, well, it could be that. It could be that too. So Sputnik ranked there. Excuse me, not ranked, but they graded it 2 out of 5, 2 stars out of 5.
Okay.
And they said this quote: "This abomination is saved. This album. Hold on. This album is saved from being an abomination
by the
music. Prince plays all the instruments on Minneapolis Sound and brings a signature sound to each and every track. His guitar work is more subdued on this one compared to the long rambling solos on Lotus Flower. This isn't to say that the guitars aren't there. They are, but in a much smaller quantity. This gives time for Prince to screw around with his other instruments. The bass in particular is featured very prominently and is played masterfully. Prince also utilizes keyboards to great effect, in particular on No More Candy for You, which is buoyed by a bouncy piano line. The rhythm section really stands out on this album."
All right.
I'm not sure who writes for Sputnik, but I'm going to just say they don't really know what they're not great writers. I'm just going to, no offense, Sputnik, but I wouldn't expect much from Putin. I don't know if he speaks English.
Yeah, I don't even know how that works yet.
I don't even know how that works. So maybe
he might be writing some good Russian material and Google Translate's messing everything up.
Do you think, let me ask you a question. Do you think if we like reunited the revolution and we brought Sheila E. and I don't know if we got more Day in the Time and we took them over to Ukraine and had them play a free show, we could end the war?
I would, without any doubt. Yes. Agreed.
Let's get on that.
Is it the war may not end, but I'll tell you one thing, that country, and I nothing against Ukraine, it's going to get a whole lot sexier.
It's going to get a whole lot sexier over there. Maybe we'll get ourselves in the running for the Nobel Peace Prize if we do. Maybe we should think about this more.
All right, I'm going to write an open letter.
Let's write. Absolutely. So we have one last review from something called Treble Zine, like bass and treble zine, and they say this quote: "Minneapolis Sound is like the jelly to Lotus Flower's peanut butter. They can exist on their own, but they're all so much better when joined together. One is a retro funk celebration, and the other is a Wash and Hendrix guitars. They are two sides of Prince. They both define him without confining him. That has always been the allure of this talented artist."
Okay, that's interesting.
It's interesting. I'm not sure if I agree with that either, but it's interesting.
I don't. I frankly don't at all. I think, again, like... maybe not. Well, I was going to say, I was going to compare this to the Emancipation Collection, but like, I really do think I was overwhelmed by the amount of songs, the two albums. Like it's been really fun to go back and have dedicated listens to each of them.
Yeah.
Cause it helped me surface a couple tracks that I didn't even remember that I actually kind of like, you know, so that part's a joy for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't want to give anything away, but I got to tell you that there's stuff on this album that really delighted me, actually. There's some things on here that
even with the attack, I was going to call this Minneapolis Sound Attack of the Vocoder for you.
Even with the attack of the vocoder, well, technically that's the auto tune, right? Rather than the
vocoder. I mean, auto tune. I'm sorry, not a vocoder. I mean, my bad.
Yeah, vocoder is the Peter Frampton talking to your guitar thing.
He should have used that. You know,
100% should have done a whole album like that.
Yeah.
Let's move on to breaking down the tracks. Here we go. Track one on Minneapolis Sound. This is titled "There Will Never Be Another Like Me." Really don't matter who you get with, cause it just ain't meant to be. No, really don't matter, cause it never should have, would have, ever could have been like me. I can get you what you want, anything at all. All you gotta say is please. Ask your mother, your sister, your brother. There'll never be another, never be another like me. About 10:30. Ed, are you like a honey fan? Do you enjoy honey?
I do. I love honey. Local honey, especially.
Do you put honey? Do you subscribe to the notion that local honey consumed will help prevent allergy attacks?
I don't. It's bullshit by experience. When I lived over in West Philly, you'd come over. Now we have wonderful Clark Park there. Lots of trees.
Lots of trees there. Lots of pollen.
I would suffer allergies every spring, and I used to go to Milk and Honey. It was a local coffee shop, no longer exists, RIP. And they had local honey there, and I bought it, and I would eat it like it was oxygen for me. I needed to have it.
Yeah,
no nothing. Impact on my allergies at all. The only thing that ever had an impact on my allergies was a Souchon. Remember the Souchon place that used to be on Baltimore Avenue in Philly?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Anyway, folks are familiar with Souchon dining. It's super hot. Like if you've never had it before, and I was new to me, I would go and order that once a week, and I would literally sweat from eating it.
It would drain your sinuses, right? It would just drain it.
Yeah. Where that year, my allergies were so mild. I don't know what it is. My immune system, something kicked in. But yeah. I think my body adjusted to eating it. Like I never had that same effect the next year. Like, cause I was eating it all the time. I think it just, my body just kind of went back to saying be decrepit. And it did that.
And it did that. What True. Do you think of this track? What do you think of There'll Never Be Another Like Me?
Feelings, little things. Let me talk through it a little bit. I mean, listen, a guy who loves his 80s material, is it nice to hear that Lindrum doing what it does? Yes. Loved it. Love hearing that little Lindrum kicking around. Nice, right? And as you would imagine, since he's leaning into his 80s style, as compared to Lotus Flower, production's more sparse, right? It's more 80s, as you would imagine it should be. The drum program is fine. I don't think it's unique or special or something unique. It's not like Dorothy Parker or some type of like Dance On or some interesting kind of use of the Lindrum. It's just the Lindrum, right? Just the sound of the Lindrum. I mean, there's some light keyboard here that dance around the song. I just don't find in this one, I don't find anything compelling about this effort, honestly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's an okay song. That's just it. I think it's okay. And then there's that extended jam at the end of the song that for a while I'm kind of like, okay, ooh, this might go somewhere, but I didn't find it particularly rewarding. There was nothing interesting about that extended version of it. He pulls out his guitar. I'm thinking, here we go. Prince is going to take us somewhere unexpected. But honestly, the guitar is so understated and actually so buried in the mix that you're kind of like, okay, I'm not even sure what the purpose of that little blast of guitar is, right? Lyrically, presumably, this is a love conquest song that Prince has been doing for a long, long time at this point, right? We've heard it before, but it's hard not to attach a different meaning, right? I mean, is this Prince talking about his legacy? There's no one going to be like me. I mean, this could be about him hooking up with some lady or wanting to get with a woman, but let's be honest. He's saying, look, guys, I'm hitting my chest. I earned this. And he has earned it, right? But I think that's why I find the song disappointing. It might be unfair, but because of this song title, about what he's putting out in front of us, like there's no denying here that Prince is exclaiming here based on his catalog that I want this song to represent the idea he's proposing in the title. Like I want him to show me something so unique here that it just says, yes, this guy is the one. And all it does is say to me is, you know what? Go back, listen to his 80s stuff because that's what you need to do. So I think that's one of the key problems for me with this song. I'm expecting more given the kind of how he's proudly boasting about himself here. But to me, the song is not one that I would boast about. I would not point someone to this album and say, you want to hear a great Prince track? Go listen to this opening track on Minneapolis Sound. It's going to kick some ass. I can't say that with any truth in my soul about it. So that's where I'm at. So some different, again, it's not a bad song. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just expecting a little bit more given what he's trying to, I think what he's trying to accomplish here with it.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think I feel more positively about it than you. But having said that, I think your take is kind of on the money. It's fine. I mean, I think it's fine. I wrote that this is, it's not a bad opener, not an all-timer, but it's not bad. Let me sort of go back. I'll break down a couple of thoughts I had specifically. One is, you mentioned the Lin machine, like you've heard it before. The drum pattern at the top, it's the same drum pattern as Mountains. It's the same.
Oh, interesting. That's true. That clacking, that clack.
That's Mountains. That's the exact same one. So I noticed that right away. This is also, you know, this is also a sort of a specific subgenre for Prince, right? Like he has this subgenre of boasting songs, you know, and there are better ones. My Name is Prince is a better one, I think. I know you're not as much of a fan of that track as I am, but there's a long line of these, I think. And I kind of dig all of them. I do think it's sort of fun when your guy declares he's the best. So there's that. Of course, Ed, to the point you made earlier, I hate when the auto-tune pops up on this track. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It's not all the time. Where he chooses to use it seems odd to me, but whatever. I do think that there's a groove underneath this track. It's not exceptional, but I dig it enough. I do think the line, "Good thing I ate my spinach because you're thicker than before," is pretty funny. I think that's a pretty funny line. You mentioned the sort of the coda of the track.
Yeah.
To me, in some ways, that's the most interesting part about it. You know, we and I feel like that's something we've seen before, too, where sometimes we'll hear he'll play a song and then there's a coda to it. And then you say to yourself, what's that? What's the coda? The coda is the most interesting thing. And I felt that way here. It allows himself to get a little bit stranger than the rest of the track sounds. It does feel incomplete, though. I would have liked to be more fleshed out. But there's some Stevie Wonder type keyboards, keys happening in there. To your point, there's a gritty little guitar solo that's buried really low. Really, I mean, you have to really search
you
for it.
Really have to search for it. Yeah,
you have to search for it. But there are also some really charming fingerpick chords, which are nice. Some little arpeggios that are nice. And I wish the whole track had that feel. Really, I wish the whole tune felt like that. So I don't think it's is it the ultimate Prince track? That's no, of course it's not. But I don't think it's bad. I didn't walk out going, oh, this is trash. So
cool. All right, fair. Let's move on. So track number two, it's called Shop in a Box. Remember my name. You can try to get it, but I can't let you hit it, cause you're never gonna be the same. I've got a box of chocolates that I'm about to suck away. Girl, I'm gonna come my way. I ain't got no time to waste if she ain't making bank. I'm scared of what a brother got to say. She want a box of chocolate every day. So what's the deal? Are you sporting some weeds? Are you riding? All right, Jad. Well, I think you're probably, I feel bad even asking this because I feel like you already have the answer in your top of your, you know, top of your head. But if you were going to remake the movie Forrest Gump, who would play that character Forrest Gump for you 2023?
Yeah, this is a great question. Primarily because I loathe the movie Forrest Gump. I hate it.
Do you really?
Hated it when it came out. Hate it to this day. Don't like it under any circumstances at all. I'm not down with Forrest Gump.
Don't believe me.
I think this is a great question, because if I were to remake it, first of all, I would make it like a horror movie where Forrest runs around, he's also like murdering people and turning them into boxes of chocolate. And I think I would have that role played by Nicolas Cage, because who else could it possibly
be? Oh, my God. You've just created, in my mind, the Citizen Kane of our era. I don't even know. There's no way I could top that idea that you just threw out to the world. Guys, listeners, this is where we're incredibly thankful for Jared's existence on this planet, because I could sit for hours writing up ideas for this response, and I would never come up with a better response than he just did just now. Perfect. Well,
thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. What do you think about this chocolate box?
What I think, and I know what I'm going to say here. Hate the auto-tune. Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. He doesn't need it. It's completely unacceptable. That's how I felt. It's like, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. I do like the lyric, "Or are you riding in a limousine? This ain't prom night." That's funny.
Yeah.
Funny. He's a funny guy. I don't hate this track. I want more from it. It could be funnier all the way around. It could be more salacious. I think there's something fun in this sort of later half of Prince's career in watching him find ways to be seductive and salacious without being explicit. Right.
Yeah. It's like a special gift of his.
It's a special gift of his. And it's not like he stopped liking sex. He just stopped being plain about it. Right. He just stopped saying the things like, you know, sexy motherfucker. He won't say it anymore. Fine. Right. But he would find more fun ways to sort of talk around it. It's like a game. He's playing a game. So I feel like he missed an opportunity here to be more salacious and have more fun because he's smarter than what this song is, if that makes sense. Now, and let me say this, a brief note on Q-Tip, because we have Q-Tip appear here. He does a very brief rap appearance.
Yep.
I adore A Tribe Called Quest. Other than Public Enemy, they're probably my favorite hip-hop act. I have all their albums. Not that there's a ton of them, but I have all of them. I saw them live. I think that The Low End Theory is in the running for best hip-hop album of all time. This is a total waste of Q-Tip and his ability. He's better than this. He's smarter and more clever than what he's given here. And I don't know if he came up with these rhymes or if Prince did, but Q-Tip is better than this rhyme. And I feel like, you know, not unlike using Chuck D on Undisputed, if you're going to use the guy, use him. Give him some weight. Make him carry some of the track instead of giving him this weird little throwaway thing. Just make more of it. So anyway, that's my brief rant on Q-Tip and A Tribe Called Quest. Low End Theory forever. That's in my top 10 albums of all time, probably. So anyway, that's it. That's my take on Chocolate Box. How about you?
A very different experience for me. Yeah. This is, and I liked Forrest Gump too, for the record. But I have a heart and soul. So
right.
I think this is a catchy little track, man. I do. I think it's, I like the chorus. I like, it's crunchy. It's a chewy run of words there that kind of just kind of hook you right in. I think the verses, they just percolate along pleasantly. There's a catchy beat here. I like that synth bass line. It propels things. There's a lot of momentum to this track. I mean, Prince even accentuates it even further by like literally panting through the song, which I think actually propels the momentum further. And I don't mind the vocoder. I don't know why I want him to be Peter Frampton. The auto-tune. I don't mind the auto-tune here. I think it gives the vocal kind of a groovy sheen that I think is okay for what the song's trying to do. Again, I'm with you in this. If he was using auto-tune all the time for all his songs, it would drive me nuts. But I think given what this song is trying to accomplish, I think it's fine. And I actually like Q-Tip's rap here. Is it Low End Theory? No, it's not even anything that even touches the genius of that album. I'm with you. It's one of the best albums probably generally that's ever been produced. Forget about hip hop and category. It's just a great, great album. I actually wrote this note, Jared. Is this the best guest rap on a Prince song? Q-Tip? We don't have a lot of options. We have Q-Tip. We got Chuck D. We know how we feel about the Chuck D guest rap.
Yeah.
And then, I don't think we're going to count. Are we going to count? What's the guy from the New Power Generation? I forget the guy's name.
The best guest rap is Eve.
I agree. I think I would agree. Eve on Hop is probably the best rap. Eve guys,
the best one.
Yeah, please, folks, go on our social media. Let us know what you think about that. What's the best guest rap appearance on a Prince song? I think Jared and I both agree it's probably Eve. I don't mind Q-Tip here. I think Chuck D is horribly under, just not utilized the right way and undisputed. Anyhow, I underlined that I like the drive of the song. You know, lyrically, it's not much different than the first song. It's again Prince saying he knows he's got it all, that and a bag of chips, and he's great. I like there's a lot of synth effects at the end of the song, which I think are interesting. He sprinkles a little guitar in there. I would have liked to hear a little more guitar. He really teases guitar a lot in this album, and he just like it's just a little teaser, and it as soon as you notice it, it disappears. And it leaves me wanting generally in this album. And I don't know if he purposely did that because he knew Lotus Flower was just packed with a guitar and he was like, let's really water it down here on Minneapolis sound, but whatever. Anyway, overall, I like it. It's dancey. It's a fun mofo. Like I like it. I generally like it.
Well, I mean, okay. I mean, you're a Forrest Gump fan, so I guess I should have expected that.
Forrest, hey Forrest, why are you cutting my fingers off, Forrest? Why are you putting them into them little chocolate balls, Forrest?
You added a new element to this movie that makes it even better. So it's a horror film, Nicolas Cage turning people into chocolate, but Kermit the Frog's in it. So now there's Muppets.
Oh wait, do you want to hear my Kermit voice? I can do a Kermit voice. Hold on, wait.
Well, that wasn't your Kermit voice.
No.
Kermit the Frog sounds like this. Kermit the Frog's a little higher. Hi ho, this is Kermit the Frog here.
And that sounded okay. That sounds a little bit more, but you're identifying yourself. It's like It's like when, who was the comedian used to do, I will do now, was it Andy Kaufman? He'd say, I'm now do my Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he'd come and he pauses and he goes, hello, I am Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like he would just do the same voice, but keep just announcing who he was.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway. Yes. All right.
Anyway, track number 3 on Minneapolis Sound. This is Dance For Me. Now, Ed, I think you know that what I prefer to do more than almost anything else on this podcast that we share together is to dive into embarrassing moments of your personal life.
Yeah, I have many opportunities to share things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bottomless well. It just goes on forever.
It's a bottomless well. It's true.
Have you been asked by anyone to dance for them? Perhaps, but not necessarily in a suggestive manner.
No.
He said, folks, he's not sure.
No, I'm certainly sure. That's because I've dated a lot of smart women.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't, yeah, there's been no, there's been no, but I mean, now we've established, I think, pretty clearly that when you get on the floor, you're a grinder, right? We've talked about this in the past. Right?
Isn't this come up multiple times? Yeah, I'm sure. Absolutely. I'm a grinder. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I will tell you this though, a dance story that's fun because we like to talk about the embarrassing things. I, for the life of me, when I was younger, so badly wanted to be able to do that Prince split. Like I would try to practice.
No way.
Not the full split. There's no way I could do the full split. But like
the bent knee one.
Yeah. So I would practice it. I'd get down near the ground and I would try to do it. And I mean, I'm not saying I was super old, but I was in my 20s, I would say. And I went to see my friend here in Pennsylvania. It was this like surprise birthday party. And me and some friends drove out to see him. And there was a DJ there. And it was sort of a little bit in the sticks. They weren't enjoying the Prince. We were playing Prince. He was a Prince fan because he was like in my inner circle of Prince friends. So me, and there was a stage there. It was like a VFW or something. There was a stage and just tables. I'm up there dancing around and I decide I'm going to do this damn split. I had a couple drinks in me, I'm not going to lie. So I go down, do the split. I do make it back up. I lose my balance and I start doing the whole arm flailing, backing. And they had a coat rack up there. And
went right into it? Yeah.
Came out totally dressed in a new outfit. It was great.
Oh, that's great. What a great image.
Yes.
But that Prince split is no joke. That's hard. I can't do that, man.
Yeah.
No, I can't do that. I can't do it anymore, I'm sure. I used to be able to do the, remember the kid in play, jump through your own leg?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I used to be able to jump forward and jump back. I used to be able to do the jump back. Ow. Although, not unlike you, I think I tried to do it at like a dance and I got the forward one fine, like jumping over it. And then when I tried to jump back, it totally wiped out, cracked my head off the floor.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Sure. Concussion protocol. Not good. Concussion
protocol. I had to go into the tent. What do you think of Dance For Me? Does this make you want to dance? What do you think about this?
Well, I have to admit something here. Okay. The song was never a big one for me when I had the album originally.
Yeah.
I skipped it, honestly.
Yeah.
And now that we have these wonderful listeners out here in our little podcast world, you know, sometimes they'll pass along their feelings of songs in advance.
Yes.
Of our review. Okay. And our good friend Steph took time to profess his love for this song, posted.
Okay. Okay.
Bonnie jumped in and said she loved the song, right? And I start to think to myself, am I missing something here with the song?
Am I just an old man curmudgeon?
I've landed squarely on, I don't think so. I don't think I'm missing something. I mean, it's just one of those things, like it's a song that, you know, people like, and maybe it just doesn't register. It just doesn't hit me for some reason. I think it's fine. Like I really do, but I can't think this is like a variation of Hot With You from Rave, but this one doesn't have this great rap from Eve, which we just talked about before, right? I mean, I like the glory, glory, hallelujah. I like that kind of coming back and kind of threading through the song. I like the way he's layering his Camille voice through this. The verses are simple, but they're, you know, all these songs at the moment, these are dance tracks with drum. Like, this is what he's going for here. So maybe I'm looking for more there, but they're simple. There's a bit of guitar in here, but again, it's understated. He pulls it back a bit. I like the piano adds in the chorus, like something a little different instrument that we haven't heard yet. I don't know. Maybe it's okay. Maybe it's me. It's me. Okay. I admit it. It's me. I'm going to listen. Here I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to blame. I'm going to blame society.
Wow.
Now I'm going to blame the title of the song again, like I did in track one. Okay. I think because it's called Dance For Me, I'm expecting something a little more interesting with the drum programming or with the rhythm track on it. And I don't find it particularly interesting. I don't find the beat's fine, but it's not filthy to me. It doesn't want me to get up and dance. Like, it doesn't pull me off my chair to dance. And I think I was just looking for something a little more from this track, and I just didn't get it.
Well,
I threw my hands up in the air. I don't know what to say.
He's literally throwing his hands up in the air. And I want to say that I'm more with Steph and Bonnie than you on this. I do like this track. Such I think it's fun. I think it's the strongest track thus far on the record, by far. There is that little, he's got a little more Camille-esque kind of vocal, as you mentioned. There's a decent groove here. Much like you, I like the brightness of the piano during the chorus in particular. That makes it feel like something that could have been on Parade. It has that Parade sort of feel to it because of the piano, I think. I like the keyboard breakdown during the dance bridge, that bridge. I think it's really pretty good. And then I also really, really like the flamenco style acoustic guitar that he layers in immediately under the lines Flamenco Eyes. That guitar is great. I wish he did more of it, actually. I think it really pops. I don't think lyrically it's special, mostly because it just repeats itself. It's just kind of got the same idea over and over again. But I think this is fun. I think your bitter, broken heart, which is mostly a bag of shattered glass, is not allowing you to find the joy in Dance For Me. But you know what, bud? We're going to get through it. We're going to get through this together.
I would take you more seriously if you liked Forrest Gump. Let's move on to the next track, which is called You're Going to See Me. Now, Jared, there's a phrase out there, I believe, where there's like a sea change, right? There's a sea change going on.
Yeah.
Why is there anything? Is there an ocean change? Is that a phrase that people use? Does that mean anything in particular?
Ocean change? I don't think so. I don't think that's a phrase, but sea change certainly is. Sea change is also the title of an excellent Beck album.
Oh, when was that one, roughly? What year is it?
What album? What year was that, roughly? It was certainly late 90s, early 2000s. Maybe 2000. It's his. I'm not a huge Beck fan, but Sea Change is I love it. It's sort of like his Nick Drake end of a love affair breakup album. It's lovely and acoustic and some really moving songs on it. And I really like that album a lot, Sea Change.
I'm going to go ding, ding. And that from now on, Matty A, the ding, ding means prompting you. Please find out for us. Sea Change release date. Let us know. And
give us some facts and figures on Sea Change.
Sea Change. Okay, cool. Okay. What do you think about You're Going to See Me? We've heard this before, I think.
Yeah, we've heard this before. I want to say this too. You know how I am about sequencing, Ed. I wish there wasn't a me song following a me song. Dance For Me, You're Going to See Me. That just bothers me.
It bothers me. That's so funny.
It bothers me that's what it is. I wish that the sequencing was different. I like the vocal right away. I do like the vocal. There's an ascending feel to the chorus that appeals to me. And this track, for some reason, I'm not sure if I can pinpoint it exactly, but this track feels more like a one-man band than any other one so far, mostly because it's almost entirely electronic, I think.
It's
keyboards and stuff, so it feels very one-man bandy. He makes another reference to Lassoing the Moon here, another reference to It's a Wonderful Life. He's done that before. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like this. It's not a favorite, but there's something charming in the track. Again, lyrically, not that special, but it's not bad. What about you? What do you make of this?
Well, first I want to say in terms of sequencing, I'm all about this following Dance For Me because I want each song to add another word. So there's three words for Dance For Me. You're going to see me adds a fourth, and I expect there to be five words in the next title. I'm just saying. I think your OC, what is with
you? And that works. That works. Chocolate box is only a two word, right? So you had two.
Then I start throwing. Yeah, exactly. So it's building off each other. Anyway.
No, this is not OCD for me. Maybe it is a little bit, but it's like.
A little defensive here, my friend. Go ahead.
Go for it. It's an editorial thing. You just don't do that. I just think it doesn't look good. It doesn't read right.
Okay. Folks.
People pack me up here.
Yeah. Please send Jared any sequencing where there's me's, multiple me's in a row.
It doesn't have to just be the word me. It could be any word.
Repeated. Anything that's repeated that you don't want to
repeat it. You just don't repeat it.
All right, I need you to relax. I'm getting nervous over there. Getting really feisty on that side.
Getting very upset.
So this is interesting, right? Because this is a remake of the track from One Night Alone. Eric, the piano and voice album. I think it works pretty well. Like I remember liking this and kind of was surprised by it when I heard it for the first time because it wasn't that long ago that song was released on One Night Alone. It was just a couple of years ago, really. So yeah. We're like, why is he? So there is a question mark, like why this song, right? Like why would he remake this song of all the potential things he could do in the album? But I think it works effectively. I'm with you. I think it does highlight his ability as a one-man show to come up with a kind of interesting arrangement of this track. Put lots of layers of synth in here. And it really, I think it flourishes. I think it's pretty good. Like, I like the synth tones. There's flutes that kind of fly around. They take off like birds in flight. I really dig it. There's really pretty acoustic guitar he throws in here, which is cool. He fills out the vocals with some really great backing harmonies, which he's, you know, done masterfully for his career. It's really great. I mean, to be honest, in comparing, you can't help, but comparing the tracks to each other, this track, and I remember even at the time, this track made me appreciate the original track even more.
Oh, interesting. You're right. Sure.
Made me go back and go, oh, shit, this is from this other album, right? This sounds familiar. Oh, it's from One Night Alone. And One Night Alone, I think, got buried in the sequencing there. Like, it made it become more of a standout track on the One Night Alone album for me.
Right.
You know, was it because for me, isolating this content of the song, you think about the song is I'm Being Destroyed by You, right? So this is that isolating it to piano and vocal, I think amplifies the desperation of the whole feeling of the track, but the tone behind the idea of the track. Like, but overall, I do like what he did here. And it definitely was a track that I would listen to on. If I went to this album from the moment I bought it, this is a track I would not skip this. I would definitely listen to it and think it was a really interesting track.
I would. Yeah. This is not, you don't skip this one. No, I agree.
So, I like it.
All right. There you go. Well, let's move on to track number five that is titled very simply Here. Some surprise, another wonder of the world. Realize that's why I just don't want you here. Ed, what is the word that you most commonly misspell? Like, what is the homonym? Like, is it there? Is it here? There's a few of them. Like, what's a word that you commonly misspell when you mean the opposite spell?
There. I'll find myself typing and I mean to say T-H-E-R-E and I'll say T-H-E-I-R.
Yeah.
Because I'm just kind of writing and flowing and I'm like, I have to go back. I have to always reread what I'm writing on when I'm typing fast because an R, sometimes depending on how tired I am, I'll use O-U-R instead of A-R-E.
Oh, like hour as opposed to
hour. I'll put hour in real quick in my mind as I'm typing really fast. Like, I'll just do that and I'll have to go back and just give that a quick read because, yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it's often, especially if you're, like you said, like typing quickly, I'll type your, Y-O-U-R, when I mean you are, you know, the apostrophe.
Yeah.
That's my.
Absolutely.
Are you here for this?
English is a bitch.
English is tough, a bitch, man. Are you here for here? How do you feel about here? Are you here?
I really like this track a lot. Okay. I know it did not get a lot of love in one of those reviews, but I really like this a lot. I think the acoustic guitar on this is so gorgeous. I really love it. I mean, maybe in the past decade that we've reviewed his material here in these 2000s, the only song that does a better job with acoustic guitars is The Word on 3121, right? I think the acoustic guitar for this creates such a solid foundation and a wonderful foundation for it. And it just creates this foundation that allows him to just layer on different synth effects, flute flourishes. I feel like it really works well. And I like the vulnerability he builds in. You know, again, we're in this period of Prince's career where he rightfully can boast that he's Prince with all caps Prince.
Right.
He's the legend. But I love when he still can hit this vulnerable spot for himself. The tensions worked out, I think, very effectively through how he does the instrumentation, how the bridge works here. We have a guy who's very conflicted, and I think it plays really effectively in how he's arranged the song here. I like the breakdown particularly, and I'll tell you why. The breakdown, not that you asked, Jared, but the breakdown, you hear it and you're thinking, okay, there's a vulnerability that underlies the song. But when he gets to the breakdown, it's like this Prince, you know, a common Prince rap where he sounds incredibly confident, right? And I'm thinking it works against the vibe of the overall track. However, if you give it a real critical listen and use the Bose, hashtag Bose, looking at you, Sam, in the underneath him saying the rap, he's cooing, he's crying, he's kind of like falsettos are drifting. And it makes me think he knows he's playing confident, but he's not 100% confident here.
Yeah.
Like there's still uncertainty underneath it. And I think it's masterful how he's layering the rap that's confident with this, the vocal effects over it, which I think still kind of questioning if he really believes his own confidence here and how he's talking about his, what he can do with this woman in this relationship. Then the song reaches its apex. There's a slight change in the lyrics where he's saying all along, I don't want you here. Now he's saying, I want you here. He just lets it break loose. I think it's gorgeous. And I think there's one cool lyric. We haven't mentioned any of the lyrics so far, because the lyrics are kind of so far in this album, honestly, are not that interesting, frankly, I think. I did like this little run, and I'll be curious because you and I seem to write the same lyrics at times. If you can learn to open your eyes underwater, then you and me won't drown without each other, which I thought was a very interesting run of phrase there. And I got to always, because I didn't even know this until I listened to it on the repeat listens. Prince always, you know, occasionally will drop a little musicology in his track. I did not know the Donnie Hathaway song, A Song for You.
Oh, yeah.
Comes out at, did you know the song?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. See, I didn't know it. So I went and listened to it after he dropped the name of it, and it's a devastating song. Like, it is just a crushing, it's good, but it's like crushingly, sadly good song. So I'm a big fan of here. I think it's a great track. What did you think of it?
So I don't feel as strongly as you about it, but I do like it. One thing I want to mention actually is that song you mentioned, A Song for You, that's actually by Leon Russell. He wrote that song.
Russell. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And it was covered a lot by a lot of different people, including Donny Hathaway. But A Song for You is a beautiful, it's a stunning song. It was kind of Leon Russell's signature song. And in point of fact, just today in the mail, I got my copy of the brand new Leon Russell not autobiography. He's dead. The new biography of Leon Russell,
nice.
By a guy named Bill Janovitz is the lead singer and guitar player for one of my favorite 90s like alternative rock bands, Buffalo Tom. Do you remember Buffalo Tom?
I don't know them.
They never got huge, but anyway, he's also an author, and so there's that. Anyway, I'm sorry, that's a sidebar. No, I do like here. I think, first of all, I like how he's really leaning into the keyboards on this track. The double tracking of his vocal sounds lovely. And I will say, to your point, I think that this is an interesting take on the love song, you know, in that here we have the story of a person who loves the object of his affection so much that he's afraid he's going to lose himself in her. And that's interesting. That's just sort of a different kind of take on this. I think there's something unique in that. Now, I will say that the logic of the narrative gets a little shaky later, because he talks about her walking through the door and seeing her on the other side and so on. And then as you mentioned, he goes from saying, I don't want you here, to I do want you here. He's lost in his love. And I think that's very charming in its way. I will say this. I do wish it was more instrumentally complex. I wish there was more happening musically with it. I think there's opportunity for some other things. I don't love it, not like you do, but I certainly don't think it's bad. As is often the case, I find with some of Prince's stuff, I love how it ends, actually. It ends with some minor keys. There's a hint of darkness, just a little hint of it. And I like that a lot. I think the ending is great. So, no, I like Here. I think it's a song that's worthy of exploration.
Nice. That's fair. I like it.
There you go.
I like it. All right. Let's move on. So the next track is a little ditty called Valentina. Another rock and roll meeting. Oh, Valentina, tell your mama she should give me a call. Yes, sure. Your Uncle Sammy used to hold it down every day. What's the booty got? Scarecrow, the buzzards away. Would you agree with me, Jared, that if you were to create a new wedding, like what was that big show that was a big hit? Was it Valentina's Wedding? What was the show? It was like a
TV show?
Like a dinner theater thing.
Tony and Tina's Wedding.
Tony, I thought it was Valentina's. God, it's Bob and Tina's? Tony and well, that makes more sense. That's a nice little clippy. Have you ever seen that, Tony and Tina's? Is that that's a dinner thing, right? Dinner theater thing?
Didn't drag me to that.
Do you ever have to perform in like a dinner theater kind of event?
I did sort of, yeah. I did. This was I don't even know how long ago this was. Like certainly more than 20 years, maybe 25. I did for one summer, I did like a murder mystery dinner theater thing.
Yeah.
You know, where, and it was like set in the 30s and we all wore period costumes and people were eating dinner and then someone died and we were all suspects. And then the audience had to vote on who they thought the murderer was. I remember it being, not my favorite job I've ever had, but it wasn't, you know, people had a really good time. You know what I mean? So even though I thought the script wasn't very good and, you know, whatever, blah, 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 the audience loved it. Like they had a blast. So I shouldn't be a snob about it. It was so people had fun.
I did one in one time in Philly. One of the, like, it was a hipper hotel. It was near Rittenhouse area. Yeah. We're trying this idea out and they had like a murder mystery dinner thing, just like a one nighter. And a lot of different Philly actors were in it. And we even did a thing where like there was a happy hour downstairs and we showed up like we were one of the, you know, the people involved,
right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It was a big fight, you know, and then like a fight up at the dinner and then people had to go around running around a hotel to find clues and find different players. And then we were paid not with money. We were paid with a 2-night stay at the hotel.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad, except I never cashed it in.
You never used it? You should see if it's still eligible. You should see if you can still use it.
Okay, I'm going to check it out.
We can record a pod from there because I'm sure you'd want to spend 2 nights in a hotel with me.
I think that would be a dream. That would be a dream. Speaking of dreams, what do you think about this? I'm not sure that segue makes any sense to actually to the song, but whatever. What about Valentina? What do you think about this one?
So actually, I'm going to be really curious what you say because I feel like you don't like it. I actually love Valentina. I love
you. Do you've always liked Salma Hayek?
Salma is
and Penelope Cruz.
But Salma is the queen of the world. I like the need of this song, and I think the idea of hitting on a mom through her daughter is as filthy as it gets.
Huh? Okay. Yeah.
You know, I think the idea of like you going up to a hot mama's daughter and being like, "Hey, kid, help me score with your mom," is pretty filthy and pretty funny. So I'm sort of, and like to the point I made earlier with Chocolate Box, right? Yeah. This is the song for me where he's finding a very clever way to be filthy, 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 filthy.
That's so funny. Cause now you're making me think today, my goal today after we're done recording is find an expecting mother and say to her, "I got 2 nights at a hotel in Philly."
See what you can do, man. See what you can do. Better yet, like find a toddler. You got to find the toddler and then say to her, Hey, or him. Hey, hook me up with your mom. I think in terms of the history of Prince's catalog and the very, very filthy songs he's written, this actually kind of ranks near the top. Asking a kid to help you hit on his mom is pretty, or her mom is pretty filthy. I love the line, curvier than a Fender Stratocaster guitar. Dig it. I mean, and certainly Selma is that. She is certainly curvier than a Stratocaster. This tune is a jam. I'm into it. I give me that solo. It's very Santana. It's a very Carlos Santana type of solo, which makes sense, right? Santana is Mexican American, as we know, as is Salma Hayek. She's Mexican, so that works. Let me ask you this question. So we have that mention of Penelope Cruz, right? And then a couple of lines, the verse beforehand, Prince has a line about the king of Hollywood ain't that tall. I think, now maybe my timeline is right. My celebrity gossip timeline is wrong, is what I mean to say. Was that when Penelope was dating Tom Cruise?
Oh my God. I didn't even think of that. He's not. I thought he meant Joey Smidgen, who was an executive at Warner Brothers for a period of time.
Well, he could have been
that guy up. That's not even a real guy. Joey Smidgen. maybe it might be a little clever, Tom. I wasn't even thinking that, but that, ooh,
I don't know. I might be wrong about that. They're not in the same verse. So I might be, you know, that was me extrapolating a little, but.
And it begs the question too. Like, I don't know. And I'm fans of both for all the different reasons of Selma and Penelope. Was Selma ever like attached to any like celebrity?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, who she dated for a long time, Edward Norton.
No kidding.
Yeah. Remember her big, you know how she got the, do you remember when she was nominated for Academy Award for Frida?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Edward Norton's in that and helped co-write that film with Salma Hayek.
No kidding. I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, Salma's a queen. And so anyway, I also feel like she's also the object of literally everyone on Earth's desire, Salma Hayek, pretty much, regardless of gender, orientation, whatever you got. Everybody loves Salma Hayek. So I'll be curious to hear what you think, because I don't think you like it, but I'm really down with Valentina. I think it's sexy.
I think a little insulted that you would have the arrogance to presume what I'm feeling about any particular track on any album.
You made faces when Valentina was mentioned during the reviews, so I presume that meant you didn't like it.
Maybe I'm constipated, okay?
Well,
maybe
I'm just that would explain a lot of things, your constipation. How do you feel about Valentina? Prove me wrong. Am I wrong?
You know.
Yeah,
this one just takes off. I like that it just kind of hits and runs. Like it just starts. He doesn't need a little intro. He's just going to start singing this bad boy because it needs to be sung. Like it. I like the Hey Valentina repeats on the back end. It keeps coming back. Catchy. It's interesting where you went like, God, I love this. It's such a filthy thing. Here was my interpretation. I was like, I find the whole idea of this song fascinating. Writing the song to, you know, Salma Hayek's daughter. I found it kind of cute. Like you would go and be like, hey, honey, you know, da 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 da. And like, ask your mom like to give me a call, like it was a cute thing. And then I went to this is odd, this is where my mind went. Have you ever seen the footage, Jared, of Bernie? This is such an odd thing to say, but it just popped in my head. Bernie Sanders, he's interviewing people at a mall when he was like the mayor of whatever town he was. This is like back in the 80s or something. So anyway, he's interviewing random people and this little girl comes up and says, hey, Mr. Sanders, can they build an amusement park down by the, where those factories are, down by the river? And then Bernie goes on for about 15 minutes talking about zoning policy. And the kid looks scared.
Yeah.
And that vision went in my mind where I was like, oh, this is kind of a cute idea. But then when you start talking about booty guards and scarecrows and curvier to the kid, like I could see the kid getting freaked out. Like that's what poured through my mind. So it wasn't like, look at how filthy, sexy, clever he is. It's like, this is kind of a cute idea that's going to go awry. That was kind of where my head was.
I want
it's a little different.
It's a little different. That interpretation is a little different. I want to say that if your first instinct on hearing a vamping song about Salma Hayek is to think of Bernie Sanders We need to do some rewiring. We need to readjust some sockets.
Too late. It's too late.
It's too late. It's over. It's already over. Anyway, yeah.
Birdie's in my heart and soul. What am I going to do? but generally, I like the song. I think it's a really interesting track. So, yeah. So I don't know why I was making faces when they were, you guys. Maybe it was, I don't know. But I actually think it's an okay song. It's not my favorite maybe, but it's okay.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on from that silly, crazy chat. And we're going to move on to the next track. It is called, no, I did that because I asked you about Valentina's wedding instead of Tony and Tina's wedding. It's your turn.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, Valentina. Right. We just got so, I mean, Bernie, I got distracted by Bernie. Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's move on from that very interesting diversion of takes on that track into this one, track number 7 on Minneapolis Sound. This is titled Better with Time.
So much time has passed. And since only one of us still looks the same. Your words, not mine. Baby, yours.
Ed, there are many things that we know that, you know, improve over time. Wine is a big one.
Yep.
Cheese, some cheeses, you want to age them very well. Fine art.
Yes, art.
Over time. Can you give me a good example of something that is not better with time? What's not better with time?
Not better with time.
Butter?
Butter's not better. Socks.
Socks are not better with time.
Yeah. No, I would say they're not. What else would not be better with time?
Multi-million-dollar athletic contracts for more than a decade.
Who are you pointing a finger at, my friend?
Nobody in particular. Just sort of there's a number of them. I think there's a number of examples that are sort of just lying around we could pick up. Just
throwing some shade. I like it. I like what you're doing here. Cool.
Yeah. What do you think of this track? What do you make of it? Is this track better with time? How does it make you feel?
This is a stunner for me. This is a stunner of a slow song. And I'll be honest, I never listened to it when I first heard the run of the tracks back in the day. I don't remember the song at all.
Yeah.
When it popped and I listened to it, I was like, man, he's just so good at ballads. He's just so good at them. And this one's particularly just beautiful. Like, you know, you have the different category of Prince stuff, right? You have the sexy ballad, the seduction ballad, whatever you want to call it, the I'm in love ballad. And this one is a whole different, in my category, this particular one. Like, and I think it's because of the content. And I know we don't do, what was the future we used to do when we predict like this shows the future? I forget what we called it. But
yeah, which track best displays the future, where he's going?
This one, for me, when I listened to it on the first couple of listens, I thought to myself, man, this really points to me to the content he develops in one of his last albums, which is Artificial Age, which I think is a really rich, mature album. Like it's very like a lot of reflection and his maturity and his age kind of shine through in a very positive way, and I feel that's rich here in this song. Like let me just throw out some features that I just feel like are stand out. Again, his vocal here is so silky smooth through the entire track, and he finds a way in this particular one, like it's that falsetto is like it's in the sweet spot of his falsetto. Like it's where it really shines. Piano's gorgeous. The sentiment of it is gorgeous and rich. There's these amazing swells of the backing vocals throughout. I think it's great. I love the sentiment behind it, like the lyrics here. I even like the beginning where it's kind of funny in a way, like, he's saying this might seem strange and so much time's passed. And since only one of us looks the same, you're kind of like, okay, man, that's arrogant. And then he adds your words, not mine.
Right.
About that. And you're still fine. Like wine, you get better with time. So I love the way he flips that around. Cause I you know, again, we're in that kind of age where Prince is kind of in that boasting stage. So I'm thinking, this is kind of an odd thing for him to say. And I love the twist, even that in that opening run of that opening verse. I love this run. So young and so naive that I never once believed the memory of you would go through me like wind going through trees. Like, I think this is a really great ballad. It's the first ballad in a while, maybe not since the Emancipation CD2, that has some really killer, you and I think both agreed on some of those ballads.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Killer ballads. This is the first one in a while. Even Call My Name, like I think Call My Name is a great track, but this one gets me emotional. Like it hits me. Maybe it's because I'm an old man. So maybe there's that. And it's questionable if I'm more of a wine or a sock. Maybe slightly more on the sock scale there, but I think it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous track. All it's a standout track for me. I think it's gorgeous. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I like it a lot too. I like his vocal quite a bit here, that sort of lower edge of his falsetto. It's a great spot for him. The piano really pops for me on this. It feels live, unlike the synth sounds. It feels present and in the room. I think this is a lovely love song. It's a lovely little love song. How do I want to say this? Like in a certain sense, it's simple, right? It's basically saying you're better every day. And the music fits that purpose right on the dot, I think. I'll also say too that the multi-tracked conclusion of this song is wonderful. The way all those voices sort of come together, all of his different ranges, and so yeah, Better With Time. This is a good one. I'll say this too. I feel like this album, and I don't want to get ahead of myself on this, but I feel like this album is back heavy. There's a lot of good stuff on the back half of it, and this is
okay. Oh, okay. Showing your hand so soon.
Showing my hand.
Two tracks left, I guess. But so anyway. All right. Let's get to those last two tracks. We'll do one at a time, just so everyone knows. We won't go, change our approach here. But the next track here is a song called Old School SK, by the way. SKOOL. School Company. Old school holiday. Old school holiday. Got a song and a love of family. Get rude enough to do. Get rude, y'all. Yes, I do. The song we used to sing lift you up. Oh, we can't believe it. Everybody's sinking in the quicksand, created by the keepers of time. Cast aside by using ancient tricks, changing your state of mind. Got your catering to the whims of the flesh before you get your paper right.
Jared, what do you think about charter schools?
Well, I've written a couple of papers on this, the phenomena of charter schools and their place in our modern educational system. And I think, there's something problematic about the way they're regulated, because there's no real oversight on those charter schools. And some people can really view them as cash grabs without really taking into account the educational needs of the student or the community that they find themselves in. How'd that sound?
It's just a list of random list of talking points that I figured you would just throw out that mean nothing, Jared.
Nothing.
All good. It's all good. We're going to start a podcast to talk about the education system, get it fixed up. We'll be talking about that. So all good.
That's nice.
Let's talk about what thesis have you written about this particular, or were to write one about this particular track, how would that go?
I will say I started bobbing my head right away to this. I think there's a lot of great lines in this song. I think lyrically it might be the strongest track for me. Fake grills to the side is funny. Fat cats on Wall Street, they got a bailout while nobody else got to wait. $700 billion by my old neighborhood ain't nothing changed but the date. Outstanding.
Yeah, I wrote that one down myself. Yeah.
Love that. And I know you do too. Love that chicken scratch guitar slipping along. That rhythm guitar is just killer. There's some other great lines. I love sinking in the quicksand created by the keeper of time. Where's the drummer? Proceeds to list them, his great drummers over the years. There's like the guitar solo in this sort of feels like he's strangling it. Like he's strangling the instrument, and I'm into it. He's wrestling with it. He's fighting it. I think that's pretty cool. So I'm into Old School Company. I think this is a really,
pardon me.
I think this is a really strong track. There's also another little throwback to Valentina. He says, "Tell your mom I'm busy," which I think is funny. I'm not available. Tell your mom I'm busy. So, yeah, man, I'm down with Old School Company. I think this is a jam, and I think he's got something to say on it. I think he's saying it well, and I think musically it's energized. It feels vital to me. That's my take. What do you take on Old School Company?
Well, to be honest, like when it opens up and we're getting that kind of that, those chords, that kind of dun, dun, I thought to myself, uh-oh, gangster rap kind of sound from the 90s. Like, I'm not sure where this is going to go. I got a little work. But as we both would, I think, very much agree, you can't deny the power of Prince's rhythm guitar.
Never. Never. Starts, no.
Oh, that it chicken
scrapes, it scrapes clouds out of the sky. It levels mountains. It does everything you need it to do.
It does it all. It does it all. It makes the Forrest Gump remake for you. Like, it just happens. And I wrote the same lyrics down that you did. I thought there's some fun stuff in here. I do. I think it's a jam. It's a head bobber. I'm with you 100%. I think it's a funky, nasty, great little track. I do think the drummer mentions are curious, though, right? So for folks, if you're going to go back and give it a listen, right? So Prince names, the lyric goes something like this. Songs we used to sing used to mean nothing, or something, I'm sorry. Now they just bland. Of course, he had Michael Bland, like the drummer. Where's the real drummer? So he mentions Michael B., Mint Condition, which I don't know if they've ever played drums for Prince, but fine. Morris, we know, of course, right. Morris Day. Jelly Bean, right. Times drummer. Family, also for the family. Sheila E., of course. Brother John, we know. We love all of them. Brother
John, right, yep.
Right. So Prince wasn't known to have worked with Mint Condition, so that's as a drum, so I'm not sure what that, the band drummer in any way, his name is Stokely Williams, so we're not sure why that name is there. He was a background vocalist on Call My Name, but he didn't play any drums. Right. But it's also notable he doesn't mention Bobby Z from The Revolution.
Yeah.
Kirk Johnson from New Power Generation, who was Prince's best man in his wedding, not mentioned.
Well.
Cora Coleman, who's his current drummer at this time, who's playing this song live in concert, doesn't get a shout out either. So it's just curious, like who he decides to include and not include is kind of funny here. I think to your point about the guitar solo, it's the best guitar solo on this collection of songs. Like it's real filthy and nice. And then he does this nice name check of basically of all the songs from the collection.
Yeah.
At the end. So it leads me, maybe it shows my hand a little bit about the next track. Why doesn't he end the album here then? Is my question. So let's move on maybe to that track, Jared. I think you're up next, right?
I am up next, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, but let's talk about it first. So track number 9, the final track on Minneapolis Sound, is No More Candy For You. Ed, we've talked about ice cream recently. We talked about it last week, in fact. Have we talked about candy? Do you have a favorite candy? Let's narrow it down. I'll give you, let's make it a little
simple. Yeah, there's a lot of options there. Yeah.
How about a candy bar, like a chocolate bar? Is there a specific kind of chocolate bar that you like?
I like Snickers. I'm a Snickers guy. Yeah, I love caramel, and I love the texture. I like a little bit of the peanut in there. So like it just satisfies. I think they should use it as their advertising. How about you?
I'm a fan of I like candy bars that have a little crunch in them. So I like Nestle Crunch.
Twix.
I like a Twix. Mm-hmm. I like a Kit Kat. And then there's a candy bar that I love. I love it. It comes out of the UK, and sometimes I can find it here in the States in different places. It's called a Lion Bar. Have you ever had it?
No. Uh-uh.
Oh man, a Lion Bar is so good. It's like the interior is like dried cereal or something.
Oh, like a ricey kind of...
Like a ricey kind of thing, but it's awesome. It's so good. A Lion Bar. Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. Does this tickle your sweet tooth, this track? What does it do for you, No More Candy For You?
I have to say this. So when it opens up and I begin to hear the song, I think to myself, whose nightmare have I entered here in the song? Like, what the hell is going on with this song? It's nightmarish to me in the beginning of it. Like, I'm like, what is going on? Yeah. Then I'm like, okay, the verses. Okay. They're kind of in the style or the spirit of songs like, say, Jack You Off or Ronnie Talk to Russia. Like, it has that kind of vibe to it. This kind of...
Yes, it does. That's exactly right. Yes, it does.
Foundation of that kind of like just rock and roll, but he's kind of making it and trying to spin it out. And the lyrics are the things that I think that we used to perturb critics a lot, because this is Prince just telling new acts like you're vacant. You know, it's a little patronizing. It comes off like that a bit. But to kind of circle back to the comparisons to the earlier tracks from Controversy, which we were just talking about that review earlier today, I think the genius of those tracks were they were a little chaotic. They were what they were, but they were like hit and move on. Like it was 2 minutes and get the hell out. This song's way too long. So he was smart to know, like, it's quirky, like for those songs, like Jack You Off and When I Talk to Russia. But it was like, I think this song would have, let's put it this way. I think this song would have been way more effective if he would have cut it much tighter. It might have still even worked as the end song if it was just a quick hit and out. But I don't know. But it's also interesting, like on re-listening, there's a lot going on in this song. So it's kind of interesting in that respect. There's a lot of weird guitar underneath it. There's chaos with the guitar. But I just question, given the way Old School Company kind of just cleanly wrapped up the collection, why add this? I don't get it. How did you feel about it?
I feel exactly the same way. The album should have ended on the previous track. It makes no sense to end it here. And much like you, Ed, like right off the bat, I was like, what's happening on this? It sounds like, as you said, Jack You Off or Ronnie Talks to Russia, some bizarre take on 50s rock and roll. It sounds like a crazy, that keyboard, that, my God, it's like giving me a headache. Like a crazy, holy cow.
It's like a nightmare.
The nightmare song, like a crazy circus or carnival or something. Let me say this. I did try to reflect back and think, okay, wait a minute. Am I being too hard on this? Am I being too reactionary about this track? And it occurred to me, like, is it possible? I don't even know about what I'm about to say here, but is it possible that he's intending it to be annoying? That there's no more candy for you? Like, I'm being annoying. I'm teaching you a lesson to put that candy down, so to speak. I also think, I don't know that he's that meta of a artist. That I never thought of him being sort of meta that way. But I mean, I suppose it's possible. If that is the intent, if he's doing something deliberate here to make some sort of point, it doesn't mean I like it. But I would give it more credit for having some sort of point. But I really dislike No More Candy For You. And I think it kills the vibe that we just had from Old School Company.
I agree. And do you think it would have worked? Of course, I think the preferred option for both of us would be just cut it.
Yeah.
Just cut it. What if this was one of those, because this was back in the days of CDs still, what if this was one of those,
like a hidden track?
Hidden track at the end of the thing. Like you're like, oh, I think it's over. And then this kind of pops on. You're like, what the hell is this? Like, do you think that you might have a more positive view of the song if it was sort of a little surprise track at the end? I think it might like it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, you know, we don't have, the hidden track doesn't exist anymore, right? I mean, that sort of doesn't exist. So that's a really interesting question you're asking. Maybe it would make it a little bit more tolerant. I also wonder too, honestly, if that damn pipe organ keyboard riff wasn't in it, if it would be more tolerable.
I'm with you, because again, because it starts with that, and like literally I'm like, this is like, I feel like you said, I think evil clowns would be afraid of this song.
Yes,
like
right, totally, totally. Like I'm in a crazy clown house.
Once you get into the verses, it does, again, it has that kind of like Ronnie Talk to Russia, yeah, kind of rock group, and there's like really good guitar. I'm like, okay, like to your point, I was like, I'm trying to like this, because I'm trying to pull out of this something that he's, like you said, is trying to accomplish with the song, but I can't quite get what he's trying to do here.
No.
So anyway, yeah, I'm with you. I think I would prefer if this wasn't on the album.
Prefer if it wasn't on the album. I mean, we could speculate all day on what he is intending with this, but regardless of whatever he intended, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Let's do the talk through, man. What's your favorite track here, Jared, on this bad boy?
I don't think this will surprise you for me to say it's Valentina.
Hey, Valentina. Yeah.
How about you?
Guess mine.
Old School Company.
No,
No. It's not Old School Company. No, it's Better With Time. Better With Time is your favorite.
I actually picked Here.
Oh,
only because it was a favorite of mine when I first heard it. And then I still like it a lot. I mean, Better With Time is definitely, it's hard between the two, frankly. Yeah,
I got you.
I actually chose Here as my favorite.
Okay. What's your least favorite?
Surprise, surprise. No More Candy for
You. No More Candy for You. I think so.
Yeah. Most interesting.
I went with Old School Company, I think, because of the lyrical content and the power of that groove. I just wanted to keep hearing it as I listened.
So. Gotcha. I have a tie here, but it's actually, I put No More Candy for You as most interesting text. I'm like, what is he trying to do?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you're not wrong. It's interesting. It's interesting.
And then, you'll like, I put as a tie, Hey Valentina, as I found as interesting.
Well done. And what would you say is the best or your favorite musical moment on the record?
Yeah, absolutely. So I put two down and they're from two of my favorite tracks. And it's his vocal. There's a vamp time in Here where it's like around the 4:36 mark. It's towards the end of the song where he goes, I just need you here. Something like that at the end. And I love that.
Yeah.
And then it just gives me the chills when I hear him kind of do that. And then, this is such a subtle little moment, but in Better With Time, he does like a, I don't know how to describe this. It's really early in the song, actually. It's in the 1:11 mark, but he kind of uses this falsetto and he just kind of trails down a bunch of notes on, oh, it's not even a word, but I find it so beautifully done. It kind of waterfalls down and cascades and it's just, it's a beautiful moment. Like you guys find it, I can't reproduce it here vocally myself because I'm not Prince, but around a 1:11 mark, if you guys keep your ears open to that, I think you'll enjoy it. What about you?
Well, for me, the single best moment, I think, or my favorite, I should say, is, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I love that flamenco guitar in Dance For Me Under Flamenco Eyes. It's brief.
Okay.
It's just there for a quick little phrase, but it's so skillfully done. I mean, it's so skillful and it sounds so good that one really pops for me. Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
Go ahead. You want to give your overall impression of this record?
Yeah. I mean, look, when I bought the album, the only songs I really listened to were You're Gonna See Me and Here. Like, that's really all I listened to on this album.
Right.
It was really fun to give both Lotus Flower and this album like dedicated listens because I do think I hate to throw shade back. I know Prince had his fight with Warners, but I think they were onto something where they're like, I think you release too much stuff at one time.
Right.
I think it's hard to absorb so much material. And I think the album suffered on my original listen because it was just so much material. And I really preferred Lotus Flower. I don't think that's changed in my opinion. Digging into this collection, I mean, this is why I love doing this with you. I mean, there's many reasons why I love doing this with you, but to hear Better With Time and have that pop for me, because that was pure joy to hear that song and really dig into that song. You know, what's interesting is like upon repeated listens, it's still telling me that my favorite tracks are pretty much what they were when I originally bought them. Like Here, You're Gonna See Me. And those songs, I think this is Prince trying to do like a dance oriented album for the most part. So I find it interesting that my favorite tracks are mid-tempo and slow jams. Like I don't really like the fast up-tempo stuff. I think the nostalgia thing here causes challenges for me. Like he's doubling down on his 80s sound and the use of the Linn drums. And, you know, not surprisingly, there's nothing new happening, right? It's making me yearn for his 80s material. This doesn't even come close to matching his 80s material. And like part of me is like, it's not fair to compare it, but we're also at a point in his career when you can't help but compare it to the other 30 plus albums he's already put out. But he begs for a comparison here. Like he's thrown it in front of us. He's saying, this is called Minneapolis Sound. I'm using the Linn drum. So how can you not help but compare it, right? So I guess in summary, like I appreciate the album more than I did on the original listen, but it's still not anywhere near a favorite of mine. So to get down to the nitty gritty, I will give this 2¾ stars.
Okay. This is interesting.
Prince Symbols.
Prince Symbols. Yeah, Prince Symbols. This is interesting because this is kind of the inverse of last week. I actually prefer this to Lotus Flower.
I feel differently. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that this has some pretty strong material on it. I think that, I think the reviews, particularly that Pitchfork one, are unfairly and unduly harsh. I think there is stuff on this that are, that is really strong. Now, is it 80s Prince strong? Of course it's not. Nothing is. No one is, you know, not even him. So that's kind of, as you said, it's just sort of unfair to make that comparison, even though one is forced to make that comparison. But I do really like this. I think there is stuff on here that is really delightful. Old School, Valentina, Better With Time, Here. I like Dance For You. I think, you know, so that's like already half the record I just named, you know. And so I think there's some strength here. So for me, I'm going to surprise you and say, like, I'd probably give this like 3.25 Prince cymbals.
It is almost, it's just almost like flip flop, like you said. Cause I think I gave Lowstar 3.25. Gave it.
Yeah.
And I think the reason, and we could, you know, we don't need to spend too much time on this, but I think the reason I like Lotus Flower was, for me, it was a new type of sound for him.
Totally. And I, yeah. 80s. I think that is a completely fair assessment.
Yeah.
But these aren't new sounds. You're totally right. But I think for me, the difference being is that I think this is true, at least from my personal taste. The songs are generally stronger here, even though the sounds are newer on Lotus Flower. If they all sounded like Boom and Dreamer, then we'd be golden, but they don't for me.
Right, I got you.
Yep. And so I just find that I find those experiments less successful than a return to and a more comfortable form.
Yep. Gotcha. Cool. Should we do our next segment, which I think is
Musicality.
What you got for musicology, Edward?
These are, honestly, this is so like just what you would expect. I'm going to give you two things, and we've mentioned them already on the podcast. So, blah.
Sure.
If you haven't heard the Donny Hathaway version of A Song for You, give it a listen, guys. It is one of those crushing, crushing ballads. Like, if you want to be really sad, listen to A Song for You. If you're in that mode, do it. The other one is, again, and you might have this on your list as well. You gotta, if you haven't, guys, and it's criminal if you haven't, you gotta listen to Low End Theory by A Tribe Called Quest.
You have to.
It's so, so good.
Yeah.
And I'd also say, just to throw something different, but also in the A Tribe, their last album that they put out was pretty dang good.
It's awesome. Thank you for your service. It's great. It's great.
So I would recommend you give that a listen too if you want to hear something a little more.
I mean, simple. Tribe only released, what is it, a total of 6 records? Let me think. People's Instinctive Travels, Low End Theory, Midnight Marauders, Beats, Rhymes, and Life, The Love Movement, and yeah, it's 6. And Thank You for Your Service. So they only released 6 albums. I would say 5 of those 6 are outstanding. The Love Movement is the one where they sort of say they kind of lose their way on that. But Low End Theory and Midnight Marauders are 2 all-time hip-hop records, all-time records, period.
Yeah.
It's outstanding. So I couldn't agree with you more. Low End Theory in particular is my – a lot of people ride and die with Midnight Marauders, but Low End Theory is the one for me.
I'm going to throw one additional bonus out there. It has really nothing to do with what we're reviewing today, but just because it deserves to be said out loud, go listen to De La Soul, guys. It's finally
on digital. Finally
work things out with Tommy Boy and the guys. This was long overdue.
Yeah.
3 Feet High and Rising for me was just a game changer album for me. It sounded like something I would have put together with friends in high school. Like, it was so wildly creative, and it still stands up. It still sounds like it's from another world and planet. If you only know me, myself, and I, we would never put that in the same list as Dance For Me because Me's in there. I don't drive you nuts. But, like, go listen to the album because it's just from first track to last track, it's so geniusly and creative. Samples you would never dream of being part of a hip-hop album or in that album. So good. So anyway, throw that in there as well.
No, that's right. And I'm just going to add in 2 quick things that are going to be, well, one's going to sound pretty random when I mention it, but I'll say, since we talked about A Song for You, which was written by the late, great Leon Russell. Folks, if you don't know Leon Russell, he's a musician's musician kind of guy. Like, musicians adored him, but he never was a huge popular success. He's got a live album from 1973 that's called Leon Live. Nice. And it's an absolute stunner. And everything on it is great, but there's like a couple of things on it in particular. He does a great song called Stranger in a Strange Land. He does a cover of Jumpin' Jack Flash. He does Delta Lady. It's a great album. It's great Southern boogie, kind of Americana boogie. And I really recommend it to you. He also had an incredible band with him at that time. I don't want to go too far off on a tangent, but if people are fans of Joe Cocker, Joe Cocker had this incredible run at the same time with a band called the Mad Dogs and Englishmen. And Leon Russell was the leader of that band. And so it's basically all those same band members with Leon Russell on this live record. And it's worth your time and attention. It's excellent. I'll also say, here's my really random one. This is really random. I kept thinking about There'll Never Be Another Like Me, right? That opening track. That made me think about a song that Sting has called Nothing About Me. Do you know that song, Ed?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. From 10 Sumner's Tales. So I thought I would throw out there 10 Sumner's Tales. Like, let me clear. It doesn't sound musically in any way like this at all. But I kept thinking about it because the lyric of Nothing About Me is, you don't know nothing about me. You don't know who I am, etc. And 10 Sumner's Tales was just re-released in February with all these bonus tracks. Like, nice. Its 30th anniversary edition. And I would say, and I love Sting. And I think it's probably his last truly great solo record.
Okay.
You know, I think they've all been a little bit, they're just not as strong as they used to be. But 10 Sumner's Tales, that's the one too, folks, that has Fields of Gold on it. And If I Ever Lose My Faith in You is on that album. But it's a great record. Doesn't have anything to do with Prince anyway whatsoever, except that lyrically there was one song that made me connect. So
all good. I think it's all about just expanding people's library of choices here. So
exactly.
Good ad there.
Yeah, that's right. Well, now I guess it's time for.
Dig if you will the picture. Jerry, what do you think about this little album cover we got going on for Minneapolis?
I like this cover. It's part and parcel of the Lotus Flower cover. You know, the same sort of color schemes and like the psychedelic kind of whatever. We got Salma's Fender Stratocaster right there, dead center, which I kind of dig, and the jellyfish floating around and the colors and the images of it all. I feel like this should be a blacklight poster on some teenager's wall in 1978, this cover. So I like it. I like Lotus Flower. I like this cover. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it as much as the Lotus Flower one because I just love the image of his like face. I think that's really such. It anchors. There's nothing for me that anchors this as much. Right. But I do love the mix. Like you said, this is definitely like put the neon light, like the black light on.
Totally.
So, folks, if you're not familiar, like Jared described some things, it's very random. There's the Minneapolis skyline in the back. You got some keyboards randomly around. Jared mentioned the guitar. I didn't mention this, but I just posted this in Facebook recently to our group. There's a little like mystery in the Prince world. There was a song called Disco Jellyfish, which is what you're seeing depicted here. And the question is, it's an instrumental of like Chocolate Box. So it's like, was that the original song and then Chocolate Box evolved from that? Or was Chocolate Box written and then the instrumental was a remix of Chocolate Box? And no one knows for sure. Which is what is what there, but I did post it on the Facebook page if you guys want to give that a listen, that instrumental. And then you have like lightning, and there's like a swan, I think, that's actually like a has a plug as a head. Like, it's cool. It's definitely, listen, in terms of his 2000 album covers, definitely one of the stronger album covers of the decade for sure.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Well, from there, let us have our question for you. Bum, bum, psh, bum, bum, psh. To the question of you. Ed, hit me with that question for you, son. What you got?
I think this will be easy. So, you know, we got to talk about Q-Tip. We love Q-Tip. We love him.
Love him.
Now, This isn't the only Prince track that Q-Tip raps on. Say what you say?
What
I say? So I'm asking you guys, and this would have to be prior to this album release, What remix version of a Prince track does Q-Tip add some rhymes to?
I like it. All right, folks, that's the question. Hit us up with those answers on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can email us, of course, at whendovespodcast@gmail.com. Excellent. We look forward to your responses. Ed, can you remind us of last week's question for you?
Sure. I said, you know, Bria Valente was part of this package because Elixir was the third album of this collection. And I was asking about, there was a Swiss dance music label that released a single for Bria called Tonight. And they also added to a collection of remixes of Prince. And I was asking, what's the name, very Prince-ish sounding name of this music label?
Yes. And we got a few responses. Maddie A, of course, came in swinging hard with Purple Music Switzerland.
That is correct. Purple Music.
Yes. So he got that correct. Also, Ed, do you remember our old friend, the European traveler, Annie Ward?
How's she doing?
She's doing very well. She's doing very well indeed. She also got Purple Music Switzerland.
You go, Annie. I love it.
Well done, Annie. She even gave us a little more detail. They released Bria Valente's CD single Tonight on February 23rd, 2012 as part of a Prince Club remix package.
That's right. Absolutely correct.
Annie's no joke. I hope Annie will be participating in the quiz off when we get there.
Yeah, guys. That's coming up maybe this summer. We'll do a little Prince quiz off.
Ed, do you get any answers on your end?
As always, Steph steps up, man. Steph just came up and nailed that and got that right. So always kudos to Steph for his vast Prince knowledge.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Well, Ed, wow, here we are. Crazy. So everybody, listen, this is the end. This is the official end. Well, not, you know, we always do
that. It's the end when we have like 15 other pods come out.
15 more pods. We have a few bonus pods that we have planned that we're going to be coming out, you know, in the next couple of weeks and the next month or so. But this is the official end of studio albums for this season.
Yes, correct.
Yes. And then we're going to come back for season four. We'll start with 2010. Ed, that will be, this is sort of even hard to even say out loud. It'll be the last 6 years of Prince's life that will
be. Yeah, it's kind of amazing that we're here already, though. We were just kind of stunned with the last pod that got published that it was our 75th episode.
Our 75th episode, everybody. Can you believe that? That's insane. Wow,
it's kind of stunning all. And it's been such a, I'm like, I don't want to get there because we have another year. We have more time for sure to go through that. We have other material we need to cover, but it's hard to believe we're already here. We're going to be approaching his last decade of studio recording. It's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe, but we're looking forward to it. And of course, there's lots and lots and lots and lots of material still to go. Absolutely. Re-releases, special editions, posthumous releases, you know, all of the associated acts.
And you know we're going to have to dig into the old top five this, top five that, top 10 those. Yeah. So we'll have a lot of those to cause some fun debate amongst the Prince fans.
Absolutely. So we still have a ways to go. Folks, let me say this. I haven't said this in a long while, but if you're listening, and if you're a new listener in particular, could you do us a solid and give us a rating and review on wherever you listen to your podcast? It really helps us out. And also want to mention, you heard this at the top of the episode, but if you are so inclined, become a subscriber to When Doves Podcast. We'd love to have you.
Do it.
Do it, people. Do it. We would certainly be appreciative and grateful for your support. So, Ed, I think that's it for this week's edition. Am I right?
Absolutely, folks. And again, I mean, thanks for living through another decade of Prince, wonderful Prince music.
Another decade ticked off. We can't believe we made it all the way through. Yep. So enjoy the rest of your weekends and have a good week. And we will be back soon with more from When Doves Podcast.
Until we see you next time, please, may you
live to
see
the dawn.
Love you guys. Love See ya.
Bye.
Bye.